Welcome, Curious Minds, to another deep dive. Today, we're really getting into something pretty significant that happened inside the Trump White House. A major clash, really, sparked by this stark warning about, well, nuclear war. We've got some intense source material here, including parts of an article called Gabbard's Nuclear Warning Inside the Trump White House Clash. So our mission today is to pull out the key insights, try to understand the power struggles going on, and really grasp the, enormous stakes for global security. This goes beyond just politics, you know? It's about how power works when things get really critical.
Absolutely. And it's a deep dive that means we need to weave together, you know, the politics, the history, and the very real dangers of tension spiraling. We'll look closely at the events themselves, the motivations behind them, and what this specific fight tells us about decision-making at the very top. And we want you to think about the different angles here, the different viewpoints in this really complex story.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. Where did this whole thing ignite? It seems to kick off with, well, what looks like just a social media post, but it blew up fast. June 10th, 5:13 in the morning, Tulsi Gabbard, who was Director of National Intelligence, then she posts this 3-minute video on Twitter. It's quite personal, reflecting on her trip to Hiroshima in Japan. You know, ground zero for one of history's worst nuclear attacks. She talks very vividly about being there in that scarred city, remembering the 1945 bomb, obliterated the place, killed over 300,000 people. But then, and this is where it gets really interesting, she makes this chilling comparison. She says that bomb, as devastating as it was actually, quote, tiny compared to today's nuclear bombs.
And that comparison is key. It wasn't just history. Gabbard's message, it was a direct, pretty alarming warning about right now. She stated point blank that the world is closer to nuclear annihilation than ever before. And she was implicitly, you know, criticizing what she saw as these reckless political elites, the war hawks, who she felt were dangerously pushing tensions higher with other nuclear powers, especially concerning Iran at that time. Now, this public statement, the source calls it an unauthorized and audacious move, apparently. It just infuriated President Trump.
He infuriated him. Why exactly? Was it just speaking out publicly?
Well, it seems he saw it as a direct challenge.
Yeah.
Right? A challenge to his foreign policy. This idea of speaking out of turn, as the source suggests.
Yeah.
The perception seems to have led very quickly to her being iced out.
Right. Iced out. So after that video, what happened to Gabbard inside the administration? Well, reports say she started getting shut out, marginalized, excluded from, you know, crucial intelligence briefings, strategy talks, specifically about Iran's nuclear program and potential military options. And maybe the biggest sign of this was her not being at that high-level Camp David meeting. That was where top officials were supposedly discussing a possible imminent Israeli strike against Iran. As DNI, I mean, normally she absolutely would have been in that room.
Yeah, her absence there is really telling. It signals a major split, doesn't it, between her and the more, let's say, hawkish wing of the administration. And you have Steve Bannon, a key MAGA figure, saying on his show she wasn't invited because the plan was basically seen as a regime change effort.
Regime change.
Exactly. Which Bannon and others apparently saw as, you know, very risky, potentially disastrous. And this view clashed directly with the admin's more aggressive line. You had people like John Ratcliffe, the CIA director, who was reportedly much more aligned with that aggressive stance, which just isolated Gabbard even more within the intelligence community.
So Ratcliffe's in, she's out.
Seems that way. And it didn't stop there.
Yeah.
There was even, according to the source, an attempt by the White House to discredit her using a manipulated video clip, trying to make it seem like she'd warned Iran was close to getting a nuke. But, you know, the actual record, her congressional testimony, it completely contradicted that. Just didn't hold up.
Wow. So trying to twist her words after sidelining her, it really emphasizes how threatening they must have found her original warning. And let's just underscore that warning again. The Hiroshima bomb, 15 kilotons of TNT. Today's weapons, we're talking 100 kilotons up to over a megaton, millions dead instantly. Gabbard wasn't just talking history. She was pointing to the sheer destructive force we have now. And she called out what she saw as this, like, disturbing confidence among some elites, some war hawks, suggesting maybe they think they'd be safe in bunkers while everyone else faces, you know,
the stark picture.
And it really highlights the urgency she was trying to convey and maybe the recklessness she saw in just escalating tensions. It's fascinating, that critique of this almost detached attitude from the consequences.
It's detached, yeah.
And adding another layer here is the existence of these huge conventional weapons like the MOP, the Massive Ordnance Penetrator. It's a conventional bomb, but its blast yield is roughly half of the Hiroshima bomb.
Half of Hiroshima, but conventional. conventional. Its sheer power, even without being nuclear, shows the kind of force being considered for potential strikes, say, against Iranian nuclear sites. It just highlights the incredible destructive capacity available, even short of nuclear weapons. The potential human cost is still just immense.
Listening to this, yeah, it really does bring back echoes of past U.S. interventions in the Middle East, doesn't it? The whole situation with Iran. It feels like there are some troubling parallels. You think about Iraq in 2003, faulty intelligence, WMDs that weren't there, leading to just years of conflict, instability, huge loss of life, or, you know, U.S. involvement in Syria, just tangled in this awful civil war, no clear way out, adding to the chaos. And Libya, too, overthrowing Gaddafi, and the country just descends into violence, instability, no real governance afterwards.
And it forces you to ask, right, what lessons are actually being learned, or are they being learned? Do policymakers really absorb the takeaways from these past situations when they look at somewhere like Iran? Is it, like you said, selective memory, or maybe a genuine belief that, okay, but this time is different?
This time it's different. Yeah, you hear that a lot.
These precedents, though, they cast serious doubt on the whole idea of pushing for regime change in Iran, especially with nuclear issues on the table. The potential for miscalculation, for things spiraling out of control, unintended consequences, it's massive. And yet, the source suggests that the political leadership seemed ready to potentially repeat those same kinds of mistakes, ignoring those critical warnings from history. And that's something for you, the listener, to really think about this pattern.
Yeah, that pattern is worrying. And this whole Tulsi Gabbard-Trump disagreement, as some call it, it wasn't just about internal White House fights. It also kind of lit up fractures within the wider NDA movement, like Tucker Carlson, for instance. Initially, he actually voiced some concerns about the push towards war. He even seemed to suggest Trump might be complicit. But then he later apologized publicly, reportedly after getting a call directly from Trump.
Right, which sends a pretty clear message, doesn't it? Fall in line.
Exactly. Pressure to conform.
And that response from Trump, it wasn't just about policy. It was a power move, really, consolidating loyalty within his base, within his coalition. By publicly taking Carlson to task and then accepting the apology, he showed everyone. Loyalty is paramount, especially on war, on foreign policy. You see the White House reportedly reaching out to other big Magier voices, like Charlie Kirk, telling them to kind of tone down any criticism. It shows this really tight grip on the narrative.
Controlling the message.
Absolutely. This top-down discipline made sure that alternative views, like Gabbard's, were pushed to the margins, silenced effectively. And it really highlights how isolated someone like Representative Thomas Massie became. He was, believe it or not, the only Republican who signed on to the War Powers Resolution aimed at limiting the president's power to unilaterally take military action against Iran.
The only one? Just Massie?
The only Republican, according to the source material.
Wow. What does the source say about why? Why did the rest of the party, the movement, just seem to close ranks so quickly on something so huge?
Well, the sources point towards a few things. There's this strong pull of party loyalty, right? Especially when the president is from your party. Plus, direct engagement from the White House with key figures that creates a powerful incentive to toe the line. Dissent, particularly on foreign policy, while your party holds the presidency, it can easily be framed as undermining the leader. And the political cost for doing that can be really high. So it often becomes less about the details of the policy.
And more about showing unity.
Exactly. A show of unified strength right now. Right. Which inevitably narrows the space for actual debate, just when you might need it most.
Okay, so let's try and pull this all together. What does this whole episode, this clash, mean for you listening and, well, for the world? You have these rising tensions with Iran coupled with these deep internal fights shown by the Gabbard situation. It paints a pretty dangerous, uncertain picture going forward, doesn't it? Military action against Iran, whether it's an Israeli strike, a U.S.-led thing, I mean, it could plausibly set off a regional war with global fallout. And even if they managed to find some resolution short of that, the damage from just going to the brink from conflict, it would likely echo for years. More instability in the Middle East, the constant risk of nuclear escalation, the immense human suffering.
And it brings up a fundamental question, I think, for all of us. What are the consequences when voices urging caution, urging diplomacy, are systematically pushed aside? The source really emphasizes this, sidelining perspectives like Tulsi Gabbard's, perspectives that stress the catastrophic risks of war. It suggests a dangerous narrowing of views within the administration, right, at a potentially pivotal moment. And that narrowing, it just reduces the options, reduces the chances of finding an off-ramp from conflict. And as history tells us again and again, it makes repeating past mistakes much, much more likely.
Yeah. This deep dive, it really shows that the whole thing between Gabbard and the Trump administration, it was way more than just some political spat. It really reflected these deep splits, these incredibly high-stakes choices the U.S. was facing, and arguably still faces. Gabbard's warning about nukes coming from her own experience, seemingly from a real concern for, you know, humanity, it flew right in the face of that prevailing hawkish view in the administration and among its allies. Listening to all this, you really have to think about the pressure she must have been under. It underscores the real personal and professional cost of trying to speak truth to power in that kind of environment.
Absolutely. And the future of global peace, global security, it really does feel like it hangs in the balance in situations like this. So as you think about everything we've discussed, maybe consider how vital it is for everyone in the public, policymakers, to really critically look at the risks of military escalation, to demand transparency, demand accountability from leaders, and to really truly remember the lessons history offers us. Because the consequences of getting it wrong, of ignoring those warnings, they could be genuinely catastrophic. And the time to act with wisdom, with courage, it's always now, isn't it?